Welcome to Reading the Grid with Aaron and Ina. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. The Canadian Grand Prix delivered a weekend full of drama with action across practice, qualifying, and the race itself. In free practice three, Yuki Tsunoda was hit with a 10-place grid penalty for overtaking under red flag conditions. Qualifying saw George Russell snatch pole position from Max Verstappen, and Isaac Hadjar received a 3-place grid drop for impeding Carlos Sainz. The race itself was a thrilling showdown, with Russell taking a hard-fought win over Verstappen. Mercedes celebrated their first double podium since Las Vegas 2024, with rookie Kimi Antonelli securing his first Formula One podium and becoming the third youngest driver in history to do so with a P3 finish.
If you thought that the penalties in free practice and qualifying were sufficient, FIA did not receive the memo, as the number of investigations and potential penalties that they were willing to give out kept increasing by the minute after the race, ensuring that we would not be 100% sure of the final placements until over 5 hours after the race ended. Alonso was hoping for a P6, and Yuki somehow thought that P5 for him was in the cards.
A late race collision between McLaren teammates saw Lando Norris crash out and earn a 5-second penalty, while Oscar Piastri recovered to finish fourth. Post-race, Red Bull lodged two protests over George Russell's driving and alleged unsportsmanlike conduct behind the safety car. We'll go into a little more detail later in the episode.
Leclerc, Piastri, Antonelli, Ocon, Sainz, and Stroll received warnings for overtaking under safety car conditions on the cooldown lap, but no further penalties were issued, which, if they had, would have resulted in some interesting grid reshuffling. All in all, a fiery and controversial weekend in Montreal that reshaped the championship narrative. Aaron, who won your heart in Montreal?
There were quite a few from this race, but I'm actually going to give it to your boy who wooed you last time, George Russell. I thought George had a tremendous weekend. He started from pole position, which you correctly predicted. Hand
Yay.
clap, congratulations. And held the lead throughout the race despite pressure from Max Verstappen. The McLaren collision between Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri added late drama to the race, as mentioned, with Red Bull lodging two protests over George's driving and his alleged unsportsmanlike conduct, one of which was withdrawn before being reviewed. Had the protest resulted in a penalty, Max Verstappen would have inherited the win. The remaining protest was dismissed hours after a 45-minute hearing with both drivers and team representatives. Stewards accepted Russell's explanation that he was managing tire pressures and not attempting to bait Verstappen into an illegal overtake. He also never reported Verstappen for overtaking behind the safety car, undermining Red Bull's argument, which many saw as petty. I thought for sure they were going to call it in since he did have it on the radio message. But after a few difficult weekends for the Silver Arrows, it was nice to see the team rebound strongly.
George Russell did report Verstappen for overtaking. Now, what is report? Is it just stating the fact on the radio, or stating the fact on the radio that you hope somebody does something with it? I do not blame Red Bull for their attempt to overturn the results, especially after Russell quipped after getting the pole, "I've got a few more penalty points on my license to play with." So at that point, it's a challenge. But in terms of reporting somebody for doing something that they think is improper or illegal, that's what all drivers do. They report other drivers over the radios all the time. George Russell and Max Verstappen are the worst offenders, which is actually a compliment because that means they're aware not only of what they're doing, but what of their competitors are doing. George even reported Lewis when they were both in Mercedes. This is one of the reasons that this reasoning being brought up as unsportsmanlike is very funny. Did anyone think of the children?
Martin Brundle said Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren should be goading Max into another penalty point.
They should. I agree.
I was actually surprised they didn't do more of that.
Absolutely. It's all fair game.
Yeah,
It's
completely.
again, in order for Max to be goated, he has to rise to that level and he can control, right? He behaved extremely well this go around. He let the team do the talking when they wanted to protest result. And also, after the 45-minute meeting, he and Russell left the chatting. They also were very cordial at the cool down room. Max extended his hand to Russell after qualifying and after the race, so he could control himself. But one thing about Russell, I don't know if you noticed, that he congratulated Kimi for getting his first podium on the radio. He then proceeded to hug him with his helmet on, then on the podium. It was all very nice and wholesome. The question I have for you, is it genuine?
I do think some of it is genuine. It seemed a bit excessive at times, so I would say that was probably for show on the camera. I've had seen that George has taken to mentoring him a bit within the team. I'd say it's probably a combination of both. What about you? What do you think?
I agree with you. I think there's definitely some genuine feeling because I think Kimmy seems so lovable. And for right now, he's not a threat to George, except for one time in Miami. He hasn't outqualified him. He was not a threat in this race. So, what does George have to lose to look like the bigger person, the big brother, and take Kimmy under his wing? You know, Aaron, one of the players that we love to discuss, Roger Federer, who was, by the way, at 24 Hours of Le Mans this weekend, so continuing his motorsport connection.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
He used to do the same thing. Whenever a promising young talent would appear, he would invite him to come and stay at his very luxurious hotel in Dubai because it was usually during the winter. So the weather worked that way and would practice with them and endear them himself to them to the point where they played the next time against them. They could never muster that anger or that animosity that some may need in order to actually produce good results.
What do they say? Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Keep your
Exactly.
rivals closer, or any threat of a challenge, within arm's reach.
I think George might be thinking that. For me, there was only one driver who fit the bill of the best. It was Kimi Antonelli. The European triple header for him was rough. I cannot believe he managed to get two power unit failures in the last three races. And that brought into question whether he's pushing too hard or there's really an issue with Mercedes' engine. But Kimi proved all doubters wrong in Montreal. He qualified in the second row in P4, which is pretty remarkable since we just pointed out how his qualifying has not been stellar. But second row is very respectable for a rookie. Piastri was in P3, and Kimi performed a great overtake on Piastri in lap one, and then he maintained the position until the end of the race. He did say it was the most stressful stretch of his life. He deserved to get the podium, and it was fantastic to see him celebrate with his father and his two Mercedes father figures on Father's Day, his principal, Toto Wolff, and Bono. Aaron, did you see how emotional, endearing, and warm it was when he gave Bono a hug? That hug went on forever. And speaking of genuine, you could see both parties not even aware that the cameras were around. They were so reveling in their success.
That was one of the sweetest moments of the post race that I saw. And even when Hamilton came over and congratulated him, I don't know if you saw the image, Hamilton was standing with the Mercedes engineers as they were applauding Kimi. I thought that was very sweet.
It was. So the only thing missing in this whole celebration was for Kimi to bring out Bottas so Bottas could drink the champagne.
I was waiting for that. I even made a comment. I'm like, oh, he's going to be on the podium. He can't drink the champagne. Where's Valtteri?
Was he even in Canada? I'm not sure.
I think he was because if you might not monitor Valtteri's Instagram as closely as I do. His content, as I've said multiple times, is so fun. He actually put something about how busy he is being the third driver at Mercedes. There's a lot of cappuccino involved, but it was very comical. And I actually don't know if he was in Canada. I'm sure if he was, he probably would have been up there drinking with Kimmy, but he did post a congratulations to George and Kimmy.
I did not doubt that he would do that. I did not see him on the broadcast, which means nothing. And one more thing about Kimmy, he definitely deservedly got driver of the day. So, Aaron, who broke your heart?
As my 3-year-old would say, Lando Patrick's favorite driver is Lando Norris, and he was so upset when Lando crashed. He could not understand. He goes, "Is he done racing? Is he never racing again?" He was so distraught. And then he actually saw Kimi Antonelli, and he goes, "I have a new driver. Where's my Antonelli?"
Wow, he switched that quick.
That quick. It's pretty cutthroat in our household, coming from a 3.5-year-old. But yeah, he ditched Lando and went real quick for that Kimi Antonelli driver.
It's hard to blame him, and Kimi is on a high right now. But you know what Kimi can do? Kimi can crash out himself. So I fully expect for Patrick to go back to Lando at some point.
I said, "You can't just ditch your driver because they make a mistake." And he said, "Can I have two?" And I said, "Sure, you can have two drivers." But
That's better. That's better. You should spread the love because eventually, and we'll get to Ferrari, sometimes when both disappoint, then there's not that much to go. But in this instance, he got lucky. One really did well and one
yes,
didn't.
indeed. So Lando Norris broke my heart, broke my 3.5-year-old's heart when he crashed out on lap 67 after colliding with his teammate Oscar Piastri. That was one of the weekend's biggest heartbreaks. He took full responsibility for the move, though, admitting over the team radio it was all my fault, later calling it too risky. It triggered a safety car that ultimately ended the race and ended what could have been a big result for McLaren, but I give him a lot of credit for how he handled it, immediately took ownership, and it's unfortunate, but I did see that they will still allow them to continue racing.
We've talked many times how Oscar Piastri's manager, Mark Webber, still suffers from second driver PTSD. So I'm sure there's something in Oscar's contract that prohibits them from openly favoring Lando. I think it depends on situation, but I think in this situation, they made the right call. I mean, Lando made the mistake, but for the morale of the team, they needed to let them race. Granted, now that they know the stakes could be that high, it's a little bit more nerve-wracking for them.
I actually thought they should have had Lando pass instead of fight it out more often. Piastri has always seemed to be quicker, but Lando seemed to have pace this go round more so than Oscar. Ooh,
So
what
would
do
it
you
be
think? Do you think Lando was quicker?
Lando's weekend was so weird because initially he looked better than Oscar. Oscar had a really miserable weekend. And until qualifying, I honestly thought he might not even make it into Q3. I mean, obviously, I knew he would, but that's how poor his performance was
Yeah, it was
during
definitely
the
more, it
practice.
was questionable.
Yeah, he hit the wall of champions in practice. I mean, he had a lot of mistakes. And Lando just kept getting better and better. And during the first parts of qualifying, he was up there. I wasn't 100% sure he was going to get pole, but I wouldn't be shocked if he did. And if you told me only one of them would get on the podium, I would give it to Lando at that point and not Oscar. So his mistake in qualifying cost him to end up in P7, which is what caused this situation where they were one behind the other, because technically, if Lando qualified where I thought he would, which would be P2, maybe P3, then Oscar would be behind him.
Right.
And then Oscar could have his Antonelli tussle, and Norris could fight with Max and George. And so they would actually may never even come that close together. So Lando put himself in the position to have to fight with Oscar. I do agree with you. In hindsight, maybe the team should have said, look, let Lando through. If he can't pass Antonelli, he'll give you the place back. We have seen how that happens when they try to give them team orders. But that's like a Ferrari strategy, except per usual, if it was Ferrari, it would have been a couple of laps too late. In this situation, they just decided not to do it. Maybe they were right, just because why create tension if we don't need to. And
Could
if Lando
be.
is quicker, he will overtake Oscar anyway. I did like the fact that they both had DRS, and Kimi Antonelli in the cool down room admitted that he didn't know who to give the slipstream to. And I loved when Max is like, "So you did the right thing, stay in the middle," and gave another. Like, yes, words of wisdom from the person who knows. But
Exactly. But I do
yeah,
have a
so
question for you.
sure.
My question for you is, why did they not put a penalty point, even one? Because for situations like this, anytime there's a collision, even though it's teammates, and it sounds like they made the argument that it was a racing incident, this is where stewarding gets to be a little inconsistent. Technically, Lando should have received anywhere from 1 to 3 penalty points on his license, correct?
I don't know because, okay, I don't know the rules that well. I'm surprised he got a penalty at all because it was, again, against a teammate. So I'm assuming the team is arguing against giving any kind of penalty. And I'm assuming Oscar is agreeing with that reasoning. So I did not expect for Lando to get any penalty. So for him to get a penalty was actually surprising. Now, if we talk about penalty license, do you think, even though that's not how they're supposed to think about it, do you think they thought, what's the consequences? Oscar's fine. Lando only hurt himself. So in this situation, and he obviously didn't do it on purpose. Like it was this very stupid
Very poor
miscalculation.
judgment call. Yeah.
Very poor because he was not even like he couldn't even claim I was next to him. He was way behind. So, and he took, as you said, he took responsibility. So maybe that helped. Maybe the fact that he took all responsibility on himself helped them realize maybe this is not the situation where penalty point should have been given.
I don't know because stewarding, they're not supposed to look at the outcome. They're supposed to follow the rules. And it's consistently inconsistent.
Fair. And I can't argue with that. I'm just surprised that they, again, applied any penalty considering it's the same team.
I get that it's the same team, which I'm assuming part of the reason is the team argued that it should be considered a racing incident because they are the same team. I think if it was any other situation, he would have been given a penalty and a point on his license, at least one, anywhere from 1 to 3. But I've
Agreed.
also heard there's bias. The stewards do not put penalty points against British drivers, but if you are of other nationalities, they tend to dish out the penalty points. So I'd hate to think that the FIA is that biased, but they might be.
It they might be, but it could be just not necessarily nationality, but personality based. For instance, I know Alonso loves to say they're against him, but he's not the most lovable person in the
No,
world.
he's not endearing himself to too many.
Whereas I've also heard that Charles Leclerc almost always gets away with no penalties, or at least the most, or at most a fine, which, you know, how could you resist that charm?
Who broke your heart in Montreal, Ina?
So for me, it's a toss-up. It's Alex Albon or Isaac Hadjar. Of the two, Alex definitely had the worst race. He qualified in Q3, which was great because his teammate did not get out of Q1 because of Isaac Hadjar. During the race, I thought he had a potential to end up in the points. He decided to fight with his team about when to pit. And he was on medium tires, which were degrading faster than anyone would have thought. He stayed out too long. And then when he switched to hard tires, there was not much for him to do because his power unit failed him for the second race in a row. The only thing he did right is to go to the runoff area, so not to cause a safety car, and retired in the race. Second retirement in a row after making it to Q3. It was not a great weekend for Alex. Whereas Isaac Hadjar put himself in the position he ended up in. He qualified in ninth, which is an impressive spot for Racing Bulls. But that is not the place where he started because, as we went, he impeded Carlos Sainz in Q1, causing one of my best Carlos Sainz quotes because he was so angry that when he asked him, "Oh, you know, Hadjar may get a penalty," he goes, "I don't know. I don't care. I'm just very angry." He might not have said it exactly that way, but it was very catty the way he said it. But he was right. Hedger did get a penalty and he had to drop to 12th place. And then he went nowhere. He was put on the wrong strategy, called to pit at the worst possible moment. So he would be stuck in the DRS train, which is everyone bunched in within a second of each other and nobody could overtake. And ultimately, he ended up in P16. Between Albon and Hadjar, I think they both had dismal weekends. And with Hadjar, especially seeing how well Antonelli is doing after you and I crowned him the best rookie so far and possibly for the rest of the season,
I think
it
we might have been
may.
a little premature on our
He might have
crowning of the
celebrated too
predictions.
much. Yeah, he celebrated too much and too hard. So I'm sure he'll bounce back. I'm sure he will, but it was not what we expected from Isaac.
No, definitely not. I did see that Sainz said he was too disappointed to think about tomorrow with his Q1 exit, which is slightly dramatic. I get that he was angry, but little dramatic there. Isaac, he's done really well for 10 races in his rookie year. I'm not shocked he dipped, and I would expect him to bounce back. So I think it's a normal thing for a rookie to have a little dip, and hopefully this was his dip and he'll rebound.
Yes. Again, he's a rookie. We're not even halfway through the season. Plenty of
No,
time.
I know. I keep forgetting it's only 10 races. It's only 10 races. And then we have our favorite Scuderia shenanigans where we talk about Ferrari and their glimmers of hope or lack thereof. So let's get into the dysfunction that is known as
The
the
Ravi.
prancing horse.
Well, oh my God, there's so much dysfunction to choose from. The one bright spot is that they got the fastest pit stop award for Hamilton's pit stop, and Leclerc's was third fastest.
It was, and they still maintain Leclerc's 2 second flat pit stop as the quickest for the year. So the Ferrari pit crew is kicking butt.
Exactly. And it's very good to be the best of something. Don't we want to be that in everything else? Not if you love dysfunction. So I don't even know who are we going to start with. Should it be Fred, Lewis, or Leclerc? Because they, all three of them, have plenty of dysfunction on
There's
display.
lots of coverage. I say let's start with Fred because there was actually quite a bit of discussion dedicated to the rumors that the Italian media put out prior to the Canadian Grand Prix, where they went into a pretty in-depth discussion on F1 TV prior to the race.
And that is unfortunate. That is awful. That is should not have happened.
Distracting.
But Fred lashed out at the
Yes, he
Italian
did.
media, and he seemed extremely pointed at where he laid the blame. And it was clear it was not the drivers. It was not the team principal. It was obviously left unsaid, but it was obviously the management. I'm not sure that is a successful strategy for him if these rumors are flying. Do you attack the hand that feeds you? I thought that lashing out was not a good look. And then both Lewis and Leclerc came out to defend him, which was indicative that there's something they're defending him from. It's not just the media, and they need to present a united front. Even though you and I have been critical of Visser, rightly so, in how he manages the team and how they respond to setbacks, I cannot wrap my head about the fact that they've replaced 95% of their car for this year when
That makes no sense.
they had a really good car and no regulation change until next year. So, and the fact that that happened and Vasseur approved it has to be on his plate. However, is getting a new principal the right move for Ferrari at this time? It just seems rushed, short-sighted, and not very well thought out.
I agree with all of that. And I know typically our comparison to Formula One is tennis. However, in this scenario, I'm going to make a correlation to the Washington Commanders, the American football team. When they were under the ownership of Daniel Snyder, they had horrible seasons. because the owner was way too involved with the team decisions. Ferrari management team is acting very similarly and not allowing Vasseur and everyone else beneath them to make the proper decisions to bring the team back to glory. What was interesting, Snyder finally sold the team and they had a complete turnaround within a year or two, and it was phenomenal. Is it Fred's place to criticize them openly? No. Does it go to show you how rocky things probably are? Yes. I do find it interesting that both drivers defended Vasseur.
Well, the only thing is, I don't think Ferrari is up for sale, or we can expect that change of management, meaning
No, I don't
driving.
think they are. My point is, if that's the one thing that hasn't changed to bring them back to glory, that's probably the one thing that should change, even though I don't see it happening.
I agree. And I think that was Fred's point.
Yeah.
But my point is that he knows it's not going to change. So the fact that he vocalized it.
Maybe he needs to be the vocal one to actually say it. Maybe that's him doing everything that he could possibly do to help the team. I mean, I don't know.
Ferrari doesn't have, but speaking of our drivers who defended Fred, let's go to Lewis Hamilton. Now his weekend was not a complete loss. He looked promising in practice. He made it to P5 in qualifying.
He outqualified Leclerc again.
He did. I can't argue with that. This was a very promising trajectory. And then a groundhog ran on the road.
Gary the Groundhog made an appearance.
Well, we're not sure it's Gary.
I'm going
Could
to
be
call it
Gary's cousin.
Gary. Yeah.
But a groundhog completely threw a wrench into Lewis's plans because he ran over him and his floor got destroyed, and he had to go the rest of the race with humongous damage. That is probably one of the factors that caused him to be insanely slow. He actually ended 7 seconds behind Leclerc, behind a safety car, which bunched everyone together. So that's how far he was, that he could only bunch up to 7 seconds. But as a vegan, he must have had a horrible race once he realized that he inadvertently killed a groundhog.
I saw an interview that he said after the Canadian Grand Prix on Sky Sports. He goes, "I didn't see it happening, but I heard I hit a groundhog, so that's devastating. I love animals, and I'm so sad about it."
I believe it.
I
I
do
believe
too.
it. However, this was not the only thing that derailed Lewis Hamilton. They were also the Ferrari strategy team.
Ugh, they kill me.
I
Kill
think
me
they,
with their
so I think,
decisions.
do you think they pitted him at the worst possible time, meaning
Yes.
that when he came out of the pits, he was in the middle of this, again, DRS train that took him forever to get out. But did they have to pit him because he sustained damage, or the damage happened afterwards?
You know, I tried to figure that out and time it because they pitted him right at lap 16, which is, but it was like the start of 16. I don't know where in lap 16 he hit the groundhog.
I think I actually read that he hit him in 13. But the funny thing is, like, we don't have a
There's no
visual
like there's
reference.
no visual. I saw one report that it was lap 16. I think it was through Autosport. It would make sense if it happened in lap 13 that they pitted him in 16. I have no idea, but I thought their decision to pit him was horrible timing. I don't know. I couldn't figure that out. And I can't figure out Leclerc's timing. None of it seemed to make sense. Leclerc couldn't figure it out.
We'll get to Leclerc, don't you
I
worry.
just, oh,
Just
yeah.
before we finish with Lewis Hamilton, I just wanted to ask you, because he was saying after the race that the media does not know the full extent of what is going on behind the scenes at Ferrari. And if everyone knew, everything would make sense. The performance of the car would make sense. And it's very cryptic, and I'm not sure what it means. Why would he say it, and how would that help him?
He's a very smart man, and I think he's trying to be as diplomatic as possible. My guess is it's probably something technical. I don't see him doing that as a deflection. or trying to pass blame. I think he's trying to offer up an explanation. Everything that I've seen since following him as a driver, he takes responsibility, mistakes, or if he messes up, it's on him. Claire said, "We know what's wrong," in interviews. Why can't they fix it?
Well, that's the thing.
They both
Yeah,
have made comments like that in different
I don't think
interviews.
it's the same. It's equivalent because Leclerc just, you're right. He points out that there is a problem. We're aware of it. But the way he says it, it's obviously technical. Obviously, he doesn't want the competitors to know what it is so they know their weak spots. So
Right.
that's why he's protecting it. With Lewis, it was a lot more obscure. It was not clear that he was talking about something technical. It was very open to interpretation. And I'm just trying to figure out if that is intentional. I'm not saying he's trying to deflect, but he's trying to explain and he wants to make sure that everyone knows it's not just him.
Which I think it's pretty clear. Like, I don't think it's just him. And I mean,
Well, he's not performing to the level of his teammate.
because the car's been designed for Charles.
It's not designed for Charles. It's
It
designed with
is.
his. No, it's notoriously known that they refuse to take feedback from one driver.
There's a quote from Juan Pablo Montoya. Did you see it?
Yes.
He said, if they want to be competitive next year, the car has to be more based on Lewis because the cars that have been based on Charles can win one or two races, but no titles, which is true. Ferrari has not won a title with the duration that Charles has been there.
Juan Pablo Montoya is notoriously salty and he has issues with Ferrari. And yes, Ferrari has not had a winning car since 2007 for the drivers, 2008 for constructors. So way before Charles Leclerc made an appearance in Ferrari. The only time they had a car that you could have called a championship contender was in 2022. And the reason it wasn't is because their strategy was absolutely disastrous.
I don't know what the answer is with Ferrari, but seems the drivers know what the issues are with Ferrari and the car or within the inner workings of the team, and there seems to be a lot of frustration oozing out from all parties, from Fred and Lewis and Charles.
Well, speaking of Charles, because we haven't even gotten to his disaster weekend,
Oh,
because
yes.
for one of the first times in a while, it was mostly his fault because he managed to crash out in the first 50 minutes of FP1. Again, this is free practice. He thought he could make a corner, he couldn't. He crashed the car catastrophically. And not only was he out of free practice one, he was then technically out of free practice two, which lost a lot of data points. And we know Ferrari needs data because what else do they have?
Well, they don't
And
really use the data when they have it, but that was an expensive accident.
it was just inexcusable at
Oh.
somebody at his level to take that risk.
Yeah.
And then he goes through qualifying and actually looks, there's some magic there. I don't think a pole was in the cards as much as he suddenly thought he had it. But then he had to encounter Hadjar. Poor Hadjar, always in the wrong place at the wrong time. He wasn't impeding, but he, because of him being on the track at that time, which by the way, I do put on Ferrari to kind of realize where on the track Leclerc would be at that point. So that derailed his lap and he ended up in P8. Again, mostly the blame's on him, but his frustration obviously was excessive, but understandably so, and he was very upset. And even though in the race he made it to P5, primarily due to Lando Norris's crash, Ferrari's strategy just was all over the place. They never pitted him at the right window, meaning they actually did better than for Lewis because they didn't pit him in traffic, but it was always earlier than anyone else who was doing the same strategy, so that was weird. They pretty much followed Lando's pit windows, but Lando's did hard, medium, hard. Leclerc did hard, hard, medium, so it should not have been at the same window. And then the fact that they pitted him on the same compound tires, meaning that they've committed themselves to definitely doing a two-stop, even though he camped asking for a one-stop. I'm assuming that's what plan C is. But he also didn't commit to it because if he really wanted plan C, he should have done what Albon did, which is I'm staying out. I don't want to hear it. Don't box me now. He didn't do that. He still pitted, but then he started to complain about it as soon as he was done.
Yes, he
So,
tends to follow the orders.
but then stop complaining about it, right? Like, put your foot down or shut up.
Just stay out and don't listen.
My hope for the Ferrari, in the words of your favorite team principal, do our talking on the track.
Yes, I'd love for them to do that. There is definitely something off within the team. I honestly thought you'd see more of Charles and Lewis together. You haven't seen much of it. Fred is clearly on blast by Italian media, right or wrong. Ultimately, it's his ability to manage the team, manage the car, manage up with management or not. I just hope they get it together. They bump down to three in the constructors. Let's read the rest of the grid. Do you want to talk about Aston Martin, our other
Sure.
partner?
Let's talk about a feel-good story, which was Fernando Alonso. He got points again.
He
Ended up in
did.
P7, although of course he qualified in P6. And I have to say, he was one of the happiest qualifiers because he qualified higher than he expected. And he was on the same row as his favorite former teammate, Lewis Hamilton. Alonso's race was actually quite challenging. He was pitted at all the wrong times and he got stuck in the pack and allowed Leclerc and Norris to get through. It's not his fault that Norris then proceeded to do what he did. However, I loved when he quipped to his team that we are racing, not testing. Definitely going to become a classic. And he salvaged his weekend as much as he could. So good on him.
I agree. It was nice to see him get points back to back.
And his teammate, Lance Stroll, made their appearance at his home Grand Prix. How
Didn't.
did Lance do? Well, he did not get out of Q1 and he ended up in P17, which is the last place of the ones who finished. And we're not counting Norris, who was classified. So technically, Norris is P18, but he didn't finish a win.
I guess. The whole weekend ramping up to his home Grand Prix based on his emergency surgery for his wrist with the pain because he had to withdraw from the last race. It was a little peculiar that in any media interview, you never saw the wrist. It was hidden. He didn't want to comment on it. It was a private medical issue, which is the polar opposite of what happened last time because you saw images of the x-ray screws, him in the hospital. There was way more to do about it. Why the sudden change?
Be a couple of things. One is there was a lot that was made last time, and maybe he was uncomfortable with the attention, and so this time he just wanted to keep it private.
Maybe.
Another thing, there could be something that we do not know about the circumstances of how that injury came about. So the less we talk about it, the more likely that never comes out. Finally, and I really hope this is not true, there's still something wrong with the wrist, and he just doesn't want any scrutiny on it.
They showed one quick image of just the wrapped bandage. As an individual who has had her wrist broken, I broke my wrist, I had pins put in it, and how it was wrapped even after the pins came out, that looked like it was there for show, unless things have advanced so dramatically. I don't know. Something seems off. If he's still in pain, I hope they figure it out. I thought it was way too quick in 23 for him to come back. This seemed way too quick as well. I don't know what point he's trying to prove, and maybe that's why he couldn't even get through Q1 and, had such poor performance in the race. But I don't know. Something just seems off there too.
I agree. There's definitely something brewing or something that has been brewing that we're just becoming sort of aware about. I do agree actually with you about the bandage because it seemed so not the kind of bandage you would have for that kind of a surgery. It seemed like something you buy over the counter. So yeah, that didn't seem believable, but until we have more information, we can speculate
I
to
mean,
our heart's content.
you even have the images from when Daniel Ricciardo broke his wrist and had surgery and the bandage that was on his. I mean, I'm sure we'll find out at some point. But another team that had back-to-back points was Nico Hülkenberg in the Sauber.
He did have points, and he was not on the one-stop strategy. Ooh, to his amazing getaway from the start, where he managed to overtake drivers ahead of him, as well as a great execution by his team to get him pitted in the right window so he would not be held up and avoid the DRS train, he came from P13 to P8. So not only did he score points in two races in a row, he now scored more points in 2025 than all second Red Bull drivers combined since Monza 2024.
It's just wild, but kudos to him for a really strong race and the team. They've really done well on their strategy for Hülkenberg. Not so great with Bortoleto because his race was undone by pitting and then fighting through the pack in that DRS train.
They're not perfect yet because remember last year Sauber was the worst pit crew, and now they have Jonathan Wheatley, who was the operations guru at Red Bull. So he is obviously focusing on tightening up all of these operational areas. And I think for half of the garages that they have, they're doing a great job. Now they just have to expand it to the next half.
Speaking of expanding on strategies, let's move over to Haas with Esti Bestie, dear old Esteban Ocon.
Oh my God, Esteban Ocon was a gift this Grand Prix. He is the only active driver who finished in the points in every Canadian Grand Prix he entered. That's quite an accomplishment.
Kudos to him.
Definitely. He was the beneficiary of the one-stop strategy together with Sainz, starting the long stints on the hards and then switching to mediums, and that rewarded him with P9. Although he qualified in P15 behind his teammate. Another endearing gesture was his defense of Lance Stroll. I can give you a few quotes that he said that I thought were very telling and also pretty incredible because you don't think of Esti Bestie, even though that's in the name, as being so passionately defensive for his friend. He is friends with Lance, and he said that he doesn't talk much, meaning Lance, because he opens up more to the people he trusts. He is a lovely person, and so is his father. And there's no one who's more passionate than him in the racing world, which is, I think, is an interesting comment to make.
I have a very difficult time connecting Lance being passionate about F1. I hear it, haven't really seen it, unless you say it's dedication to the team for why he's willing to sacrifice his wrist and get back in the car. I would think even you and or your father and the team would want you to prioritize your health, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what passionate in this context means. I think it's possible that he's so introverted and shy that he feels the less I say, the less I show, the more they will leave me alone. And that's fine because
Could
that's my
be.
happy space.
Totally get it. Could
Yeah.
be.
The thing with his health is more concerning.
I agree.
So I hope even if he is that passionate and he's willing to risk it, his father could at least prevail on him that it's not worth it, or I'll give you all the time you need to make sure you feel better because I'm not going anywhere.
But like, where is Aston Martin's media and PR team? Because you have a driver, you have Lance Stroll, whose job is to be a Formula One driver. There are only 20 of them. Part of your job is to speak to the media and to have a forward-facing role representing the team. I understand not everyone is an extrovert. I would think, given the resources that the team has, though, they would be able to give him some coaching or skills to help him work through some of that. And that's just not there either.
It's possible that for him, even that is very hard to do, and his father doesn't want him to be pressured that way.
Maybe I don't know. I guess we'll see how that evolves throughout the season because.
But my point is, he doesn't have to be Daniel Ricciardo because nobody
Oh,
can.
there's no replicating Daniel Ricciardo and that charisma.
But he could at least be Oscar Piastri, who does not radiate charisma,
Smiles.
but he knows how to conduct himself and he leaves a good impression.
Correct. I mean, you have a gamut of personalities on the grid. I struggle with him at times because he seems to be the least excited out there. You know, if you're not excited, it also translates into your performance at times.
It does, but I have to say the other endearing thing about Esti Besti was that in Monaco there was a video of when they are during the driver's parade and everyone kind of pairs off and Ocon is talking to Alonso and then he sees that Lance is by himself, so he literally pulls him in.
Well, that
And
is nice.
I just think he gets him.
Now it is time for us to spill the grid, where we can talk about the off-track drama, spicy team radio moments, and some of the behind-the-scenes chaos that makes F1 more than just a race. We have the upcoming F1 movie. This has been making quite a splash. We know they had the private screening in Monaco. We're recording on Monday, June 16th. The F1 movie premieres in New York City this evening. Never before has a paddock taken over Times Square. I think it'll be exciting, some of the images and stories that come out of the event. I know we are looking forward to seeing the movie in a couple of weeks.
Well, I have a question for you. I'm sure they will appear at the premiere. Will they actually watch the movie again? Because they have seen it.
My guess is yes. Qatar Airways had all the F1 drivers from Montreal flying into New York. Even their lane tickets were done. I will say the marketing PR for it was really spot on. I was impressed. We also have summer break approaching in the next 2.5 to 3 weeks, give or take. So we anticipate these rumors in preparation of silly season to really ramp up, especially because six drivers are out of contract by the end of the year.
Juicy.
No, could be. And even though he may not be everyone's cup of tea, we on Reading the Grid are fans of Nico Rosberg commentating for Sky Sports. He is a gem. Highlight of this past weekend is when he fact-checked Danica Patrick and actually corrected her mid-broadcast.
I'm not surprised. Nico famously won 2016 World Drivers' Championship and then promptly quit. And just to show you kind of the personality he is, so that was also the year they had their annual dinner. And until 2016, it was Lewis Hamilton who was winning the championship. So he would always pay for the dinner. Well, in 2016, not only did Nico refuse to have Lewis pay because Lewis offered, he also made them split the checks so each can pay for their own meals. And that just shows how petty he can be. Also shows how horrible their relationship was at the time. So they were teammates.
Is it any better?
Well, so it's interesting because during his commentary, there are a few digs that he throws at Lewis. I think he threw more digs when Lewis was in Mercedes. I think he pities him now that he's in Ferrari. So it's like the digs are not even coming. But he did say something nice that apparently Lewis always sends his kids gifts for Christmas, and these gifts are spectacular.
Oh,
Which
that's really sweet. Maybe
we're
Lewis can
not
adopt my kids at Christmas.
exactly. He is just pettiness and very straightforward, and also can give out dirt if need be. So he's all of that at once. I think it was last year he was commentating and they were talking about what is going on with Alpine, because as you remember, Alpine was going through a lot of transition. And I don't know if at that time we already knew that Briatore was on the warpath or was about to come in. And he was saying, oh, they're putting it up for sale. And everyone was kind of taken aback. And he's like, oh, yeah, they offered me. Like, they offer me a steak. And then it came out that actually, like, they were just looking for investors. So he got the usual investor package. It wasn't like the ownership of being. But my point is, he was not afraid to stick his foot in his mouth or say something that was actually happening. And that's very refreshing.
It is. He's definitely not afraid to tell you how it really is. Speaking of Alpine, their chaotic and tumultuous years are getting a little bit rockier, if that's even possible. Their Renault Group CEO has announced his resignation. There are a number of reports swirling around the fact that Fernando Alonso visited Flavio Briatore at least 5 times on the paddock before the race started. So, what do you think if Alonso goes to Alpine? Who can land at Aston Martin? Do you think we'll ever see Max and Charles in emerald green?
Let's back up. Lonza to Alpine. Why? Like, I don't see what it is. What is in
Didn't he
him for
start
him?
his career at Alpine?
He did, but I thought the whole point of him being currently in Aston Martin is for him to work with
Newey.
Adrian Newey.
Right.
Now, if my theory, because you think if Max ever replaces anyone at Aston Martin, it will be Lance. Now,
I
if my
do.
theory is correct that Max is replacing Alonso, then Alonso definitely needs a place to go. So that could be a possibility. There's something brewing, but it's hard for me to picture what it is, because if Alonso just wanted to be in a team, like, he has more than one to choose from. I thought he wanted an Aston Martin because he's serious about having a good car finally.
My conspiracy is I think Max will still go to Mercedes
Okay.
with Kimi. I still hold on to that. I still think no matter what, Max is not going to be a Red Bull. I think
In
there's,
2026 or eventually?
I'm going to say 2026. Definitely eventually, but I think as early as 2026. I do. I just think there is, like, the dam is about to break behind Red Bull. They have lost Newey. They lost Wheatley. They are, that second seat is a problem. Horner and his scandal and being clamped down on his ability because of having to buy out Perez and his contract, that did not go over well with the ownership group. So I just think there's something big brewing at Red Bull. I know Horner has claimed he is committed to the team. He's not going anywhere. He has a contract. But even as Horner said, a contract, you can get out of it depending on how expensive and what the terms are to let somebody leave. And then there's also rumors of Charles leaving Ferrari.
Okay, that is part of that rumor milled by Italian
Yes.
media, and I think that's, to me, it's more like a scaremongering tactic that if you don't do something, you're gonna lose him, and then what do you have left? Because Lewis, no matter how great he is, he only has a couple of years committed, so we're about to lose a lot. And I think Charles has an out clauses starting 2026. In 2027, do I see Max and Charles in emerald green, i.e., Aston Martin colors? No, I do not, because I don't think Max would want a competitive teammate.
He needs a Valtteri Bottas as his second teammate.
He needs a clear number two because he needs to be number one. He needs
Correct.
everything to be, he needs what you think Charles has, which is have everything develop towards him. So I never see them as teammates. Do I see Charles in another team? I would say not in the near future, not until 2027, which is the
Okay.
same with Max. I don't think he's leaving, because nobody knows what's happening in 2026. We have supposition, we have guesses, and so does he. He doesn't know, we don't know, and until he knows, why would he make a radical change?
Guess we'll find out when silly season kicks in.
Definitely will. My first Canadian Grand Prix that I watched was a bit snoozy, just like the image of Clipinto in the car snoozing between qualifying session, which is very cute. The potential for penalties handed out after the race provided some spice, but not enough for this to be super memorable, except for Kimi Antonelli's podium and papaya rules being activated.
I would say between surprise podiums, teammate collisions, and post-race protests, there was no shortage of controversy. From strategic missteps to emotional moments, this Grand Prix left its mark on the 2025 season. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
We'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestion for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your favorite F1 snitch. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.